More of Lake Effect Now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Most talk about weapons today involves firearms, but one Milwaukee museum curator wanted to examine what came before. By exploring humans and their behavior, Milwaukee Public Museum Anthropology Collections curator Dawn Cher-Tomei sees the weapon as a tool that has evolved over thousands of years to solve a problem.
The exhibit, Weapons Beyond the Blade, displays over 150 pieces of weaponry from over 50 countries over 10,000 years. But Cher-Tomei says she wanted to not only broaden the conversation about weapons, but about warriors as well.
She'll talk this Friday at the Public Museum about female warriors throughout history, from the famous Joan of Arc to the lesser-known soldiers and spies of the Civil War. Cher-Tomei joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in the studio recently to share stories of some of these female warriors, and she began by explaining how the weaponry exhibit inspired her lecture.
Not all weapons, first of all, were used in combat or standing armies, like a lot of people think. And a variety of people use them. And so when I started working on this exhibit, I really wasn't thinking about gender. But as we were exploring the different weapons in the collection, we were finding men and women use the weapons. And I think that's also a story that people are not familiar with. To make the assumption that only men use weapons is really a falsehood.
Yeah, or that only men are soldiers. And while we have great representation and, you know, film producers and companies are more willing to put women as heroes on the big screen. You know, we just had Wonder Woman, which is, of course, like a huge example of ancient and modern weaponry to hit upon that. But you stress the importance that, no, there are real women we can look up to, not just fictional ones.
That's right. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Wonder Woman myself, and she's actually highlighted right at the end of the presentation. So in Hollywood and in the film industry, they're more than willing to explore the real stories of men in battle. Dunkirk, for example. However, the women's story is often untold, and, you know, they're often seen in support roles. So I explore the combat roles for women in different militaries and when they started. And many countries didn't even have, you know, a date when women began combat. There was just, it had always been. So we didn't have women in combat roles until 2016 in the United States.
Right. And it's still debated upon.
It's still debated. And so I explore at the end of the talk a few of those thoughts, you know, for and against women in combat.
Which is an interesting perspective for you, not only as an anthropologist, but you also have family history.
I do.
Women in the military.
I do. And I think that's where it came together with the exhibit of, you know, the Weapons Beyond the Blade exhibit. And I've always been interested in the juxtaposition of what I, you know, might call marginalized groups in the military. And so my thesis, in fact, my UWM thesis was American Indians in the U.S. military and their history and the idea of the warrior image and the validity of it. So for this one, personally, you know, I was asked to do a talk, and I thought about the women warriors line that sort of ran through this exhibit, my own history. I had two aunts who were part of the first group to ever volunteer in the Women's Army Corps in World War II. And so one was stateside, one was sent to the Philippines. My sister was a career Army as well. And so we joke in our family that it's only the women who join the military.
Some of these women highlighted, you say they range from those who took up arms to be honorable, defend their country, land, freedom, and others just like to fight.
They just
had
like
very
to fight.
Interesting lives.
Right. And, you know, very rich lives. So it was very difficult, in fact. I mean, when you dig deeper, that you can find these stories. But to bring them together, you know, was a challenge. And to choose the stories, because I'm really looking, only highlighting 10 women. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there were over 300 that I was looking at. So, I encourage people to look into these. And, you know, a great website is Badass of the Week.
That sounds amazing.
It is. So, which has a lot of the women's stories in there as well.
Okay.
It's not the only one, but it's a good one.
So, let's get into some of these. We have a pretty good range. Let's start with perhaps what people will most know, Joan of Arc.
Right.
How did she become a woman warrior?
Well, you know, it wasn't her choice, quite honestly. And that's some of the story, that she was basically felt she was chosen for this cause and to try and put the true king on the throne. And this is a time when they were, the British and the French were fighting. So, you know, she was visited by saints who were basically encouraging her to leave the flocks to do this. So she felt she was chosen. So she wouldn't have automatically volunteered, says, yes, I will fight for this cause. I will join the army, because that just wasn't a thing back then. So, you know, sometimes history paints you in that sense. So some of the women warriors that I have made a conscious decision to join the cause. And sometimes they were just in circumstances where their valor sort of brought them out of the shadows of history.
Now, with Joan of Arc, you know, even on Marquette campus, we have the chapel for
Absolutely.
Her and everything like that. But
yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised by some of the other names you mentioned. Going ahead in history about a couple hundred years to the late 1600s, we have Julie Daubigny, known in France, better known as Mademoiselle Maupin or La Maupin.
Mm-hmm.
Highlights is a swordswoman and an opera singer, but there's so much more to her.
There,
if you want to explain, you know, what she is and how did she appeal to you with her life?
Well, one of the reasons, so I had two people who helped me put all of these together. And one of them was one of my graduate students, you know, from UWM, and the other was my daughter. And both of them just gravitated to this story. And so, you know, in homage to them, you know, I decided to put them in there. But she was just such a colorful character. Like, some of these women, too, were brought up in privileged households. And she was taught to fence and to fight. And even though she was married off to somebody who lived abroad, she decided not to join them and took up with a French fencing master and earned money by doing, you know, fencing demonstrations and street fighting. But the one thing when what you mentioned about the opera, which came to the fore, is that she would often taunt people in the street to get them kind of to fight and to duel, because she liked doing that so much. So she would sing these taunts to them, and people heard her doing that. So she became famous. And then they asked her that, said, how would you like to sing in the Paris Opera? So that led to both her role as a street fighter as well as an opera singer.
Which is amazing.
That's right.
yeah, even was arrested, I believe, and kind of dodged charges.
Yeah, so she packed a lot of life into her 33 years. So she was in affairs with men and women, and one of the most notable examples was she was at a society ball, and she kissed a young lady, and three different men, you know, challenged her to a duel. And she beat all three of them, but she broke the law by dueling in the, you know, in Paris, which mm-hmm. was forbidden. You have to, you know, go outside the city walls and duel. So she fled to do that and then came back later when it was a little calmer.
And the story that I love the most that just shows her, you know, maybe poor judgment, but tenacity, was arson charges on a convent.
Yes, yes, the arson. So she was taken with it by a young lady whose parents decided then to get her away from Julie. They put her in a convent. And so then Julie decided to break her out of a convent. So she broke into the convent, set it on fire, and then ran away with this young lady. And the affair didn't last for long, maybe because it got boring after that. Because, I mean, I don't know what you can really...
You can't top
you
that.
You can't top that.
I broke you out of a convent.
Right.
Now what?
So, like I said, she lived a lot in a very short life.
Moving forward to America in the 1800s, mostly, of course, the Civil War, which we most recognizably know by men fighting men, you know,
yes.
brothers against brothers. Civil mm-hmm. War is all about North versus South, brothers fighting each other. But we have a Cuban-born woman who masqueraded as a male Confederate soldier during the Civil War. Who is she?
So this is Loretta Danta Velasquez, and she, again, was born into a wealthy family. So this wasn't that she was fighting on the street. There are some women warriors, basically, who are brought up in different circumstances. But she was sent to school in New Orleans with her aunt and then fell in with a Texas soldier and married at 14. She ran away. I think wealthy and rebellious is a theme for several of these. Maybe they were bored.
Because they weren't working.
They weren't working, right?
Yeah.
They had other people to work for them. Mm-hmm. But even though there were women who masqueraded as men in the Civil War, there were several accounts of them. What it distinguishes Loretta is that she wrote a memoir that discussed her life and what she did and the battles that she was in and how it came to be. And that's where we get a lot of the information is actually from her own words. But when Texas seceded from the Union in 1861, he joined the Confederate Army. She wanted to go with him, and he refused. So she decided, you know, to make a uniform and disguise herself as a man, and she took on the name Harry T. Buford. She gave herself the rank of lieutenant, moved to Arkansas, and then she got together a regiment of volunteers, and then she found her husband in Florida, brought her regiment to him, and presented them and herself as their commanding officer. And one part I kind of was using my imagination because it says his reaction, her husband, when she arrived in a Confederate uniform with a mustache,
right,
to her husband, his reaction is not recorded in history.
Oh, really?
But a few days later, he was killed in, quote, unquote, a shooting accident. So I have no idea that could have been, in my mind, is saying, like, he's like, go home and, you know, stay at home. And she's probably like, no, this is my regiment. I'm going to lead them. So I don't know really what the shooting accident was about.
We can only speculate.
Right.
Well, I know she was determined because when she was discovered, she was discharged. But then she enrolled in the Army again.
That's right.
A different location. So
right. And she went back and forth in men's and women's clothing. So she infiltrated. She was a Confederate spy. She wore women's clothing and was able to get intelligence in D.C. and some other places as a woman, you know, and then she was bored with that. And then she joined up again and joined another regiment. But she was always afraid of being discovered. So one of those times when she was wounded, she fled the scene back to New Orleans because she was afraid that they would discover her gender. Mm-hmm. But then when she got to New Orleans, they arrested her because they thought she was a Union spy.
Oh.
And then they discovered she wasn't a Union spy, and then they charged her for wearing men's clothing. But she was at a lot of the famous battles, including, like, the Battle of First Manassas, known as Bull Run, and the Battle of Ball's Bluff. And a lot of these places, she was just in the right place at the right time. The Battle of Shiloh, she was there.
Yeah.
And so after her memoir, she wrote it actually to make money, and she had a son at that time. There was a General Early, who was a very famous Confederate general. When it came out, it had mixed reviews, and he denounced it as pure fiction. But modern scholars actually found some of it to be quite accurate when they did the fact-checking and all of her details that she was able to include in her book. So maybe she was justified. Unfortunately, oftentimes it happens after your death.
Right. And one thing I'm curious about is, you know, do certain periods in history reflect differently on these women? You know, at the time, they say, no, this is totally fiction. And then not until later where we can prove, no, these events did happen. Loretta was a Civil War Confederate soldier. Or Joan of Arc, she becomes a saint in 1920. Mm-hmm. But how did they view her during the time? You know, does it often just ebb and flow?
It depends on your country. It depends on the time period. And like I said before, in a lot of places, men and women took up arms. It wasn't a standing army. You did anything to protect yourself. Looking at Japanese examples, there were female ninjas, there were female samurai. And we have this very different perception, especially during the later Edo period, you know, of women as being very passive, Japanese women as being very passive. And that was not always the case. I mean, there were women who were, you know, led their own contingents. They were part of wars. I mean, if nothing else, if you're looking at women soldiers, Russia is an excellent example of looking at women who are in the fray from the beginning.
Now, what do you think women today and young girls going today to this exhibit, to seeing your talk, what can they learn from these women?
Thinking more broadly about what a woman warrior is, because it's not always physically fighting or using real weapons You know, I put in this context women warriors is looking at, we always stand on the shoulders of those who went before us, especially the women, and how far we've come in a very short time in the United States in particular is pretty astounding. So women willing to go to jail for the right to vote, you know, or for equal pay. Some women have chosen words as their weapon. Some of them have chosen picket signs. So the courage to stand up for what you believe in, I think, is one of the bigger messages that I think it's crucial. And if you believe very strongly in something, sometimes you do have to fight, but you have to choose what battle will be and in what form. And speaking of women, I don't really include this in the talk, but in the exhibit, I've included, I think, one of the most resonating pieces are the hatpins, the ladies' hatpins. And I chose to put them in the defensive area of the exhibit. And people just looked at them, and it really dawned on them, what is a weapon? Mm-hmm. You know, how was it used? Well, women at that time in the late 1800s and early 1900s started working outside the home. And they were not always escorted by male companions. And they had all different hours in factories and offices and things like that. And so they wore these very large hats. And hat pins were their only defense sometimes of coming home late at night. There was a rise in assault on women, on streetcars and on the streets. And so women started talking about and showing other women how to use these in self-defense. And so here, even in Milwaukee, we in 1913, we passed a law to restrict the length of ladies' hatpins because of the rise of sometimes purposeful and accidental assaults. And so on exhibit, I show a ladies' hatpin before the law was enacted and then after the law was enacted and what the size difference was. And it wasn't until 1982 that the law was repealed here in Milwaukee. So now we can carry
later.
Right. We can carry hat pins any length.
All right. Well,
all right,
I'll be sure
so
to get one.
I was going
to
say.
Well, hopefully people can come and see this and be inspired and continue the importance that history looks upon these women in a positive light.
Well, thank you. I hope so, too.
Dawn Cher Tomei is the curator of anthropology collections at the Milwaukee Public Museum and teaches in the UW-Milwaukee Graduate Museum Studies program. Her lecture, Forget the Gentler Sex, is this Friday at the museum, where you'll also find the exhibit Weapons Beyond the Blade.